Hello and welcome to the Pediatric Critical Care Medicine Audio Abstracts. I'm Dr. Erin Bennett, and on behalf of PCCM, I'm happy to present this audio recording of the research abstracts that appear in this month's issue. Let's get started. Abstract 1 is a featured original research article by Stansky et al. Derivation and validation of pediatric sepsis-associated acute kidney injury subphenotypes with prognostic relevance. Objectives. Sepsis-associated acute kidney injury is a heterogeneous syndrome associated with poor outcomes. Subphenotypes of sepsis-associated acute kidney injury with prognostic and therapeutic relevance have been identified in adults, but not in children. We sought to identify reproducible and clinically relevant pediatric sepsis-associated acute kidney injury subphenotypes using readily available clinical and laboratory data. Design. Secondary analysis of a retrospective observational study of pediatric sepsis. Setting. 13 PICUs in the United States from January 2012 to January 2018. Patients. Patients age 0 to 18 years old with septic shock defined as sepsis and requiring vasoactive medications and day 1 to 2 sepsis-associated acute kidney injury defined as greater than or equal to kidney disease improving global outcomes stage 1 by serum creatinine. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. 1,455 patients were included after inclusion and exclusion criteria were applied. 873, or 60%, were in the derivation cohort, and 582, or 40%, were in the external validation cohort. A 2-subphenotype latent class analysis model had the best fit in both cohorts. Pediatric sepsis-associated acute kidney injury subphenotype 1 and pediatric sepsis acute kidney injury subphenotype 2. Pediatric sepsis-associated acute kidney injury subphenotype 2 was characterized by younger age, more organ support, greater fluid accumulation, and laboratory evidence of inflammation, acid-base derangement, thrombocytopenia, and coagulopathy. Pediatric sepsis-associated acute kidney injury subphenotype 2 had uniformly worse outcomes, including higher rates of severe and persistent acute kidney injury at days 3 to 4, 54% versus 23% with a p-value less than 0.001, and day 7, 31% versus 12% with a p-value less than 0.001, increased use of continuous renal replacement therapy, 21% versus 6% with a p-value less than 0.001, and independently increased odds of mortality after adjustment for potential confounders, with an adjusted odds ratio of 1.59 and a 95% confidence interval of 1.04 to 2.41 with a p-value equal to 0.03. A parsimonious classification model accurately identified pediatric sepsis-associated acute kidney injury subphenotype 2 membership in the derivation and internal validation cohorts, with C statistics of 0.94 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.92 to 0.95, and 0.85 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.82 to 0.88, respectively. Conclusions. We identified 2 distinct early pediatric sepsis-associated acute kidney injury subphenotypes using readily available data that exhibit differential risk for poor outcomes and can be identified from a parsimonious set of variables. Pending external validation, operationalization of pediatric sepsis-associated acute kidney injury subphenotypes may allow for prognostic enrichment to guide clinical care and inform clinical trial enrollment. Abstract 2 is a featured original research article by Varela et al. Acute bronchiolitis in infants on invasive mechanical ventilation, physiology study of airway closure. Objectives. This study aimed to explore whether airway closure can be detected in patients with severe acute bronchiolitis on invasive mechanical ventilation. Design. Single-center prospective physiologic study carried out in 2023 to 2024. Setting. PICU in a tertiary care general hospital. Patients, infants with acute bronchiolitis undergoing invasive mechanical ventilation. Interventions. Under deep sedation and neuromuscular blockade, the mechanical ventilator in a volume-controlled mode was transiently set with a respiratory rate of 5 breaths per minute, a tidal volume of 6 milliliters per kilogram of ideal body weight, positive end expiratory pressure of 0 centimeters of water, a flow rate of 2 liters per minute, an inspiratory to expiratory ratio of 1 to 1, and a FaO2 of 1. After recording 3 breath cycles, the patient was returned to baseline ventilatory settings. Measurements and main results. We identified the presence of airway closure through the low-flow pressure-volume curve obtained from a pneumatocomometer with a flow sensor placed at the Y-piece and simultaneously from the pressure impedance curve and ventilation maps acquired using electrical impedance tomography. We included 12 patients, and airway closure was detected in 7 of them. The median airway opening pressure was 14 centimeters of water, with an interquartile range of 11 to 17 centimeters of water. Patients with airway closure exhibited high levels of driving pressure, with a median of 16 centimeters of water and an interquartile range of 11 to 17 centimeters of water, and low levels of respiratory system compliance, with a median of 0.41 milliliters per centimeter of water per kilogram and an interquartile range of 0.38 to 0.59 milliliters per centimeter of water per kilogram. When these parameters were corrected for airway opening pressure, there was a significant decrease in driving pressure to 9 centimeters of water with an interquartile range of 8 to 12 centimeters of water and a p-value equal to 0.018, and a significant increase in respiratory system compliance to 0.7 milliliters per centimeter of water per kilogram with an interquartile range of 0.53 to 0.81 milliliters per centimeter of water per kilogram and a p-value equal to 0.018. Conclusions. Airway closure requiring high opening pressures can be detected in ventilated infants with acute bronchiolitis, and this phenomenon may impact respiratory mechanics. Abstract 3 is a featured original research article by Hames et al., Clinical and Risk Analytics Associations with Extubation Failure in Children Following Congenital Cardiac Surgery, a multicenter retrospective cohort study from 2017 to 2020. Objectives. The use of risk analytics indices alongside clinical factors has potential to assist clinicians in identifying children at high risk for extubation failure. We investigated the association of two physiologic risk analytics indices with extubation failure in children receiving mechanical ventilation after cardiac surgery: the probability of inadequate oxygen delivery and inadequate ventilation of carbon dioxide index. A secondary aim was to evaluate clinical factors associated with extubation failure. Design. Multicenter retrospective cohort study. Setting: 8 international pediatric cardiac ICUs. Patients: children between 1 month and 12 years old receiving mechanical ventilation for greater than 48 hours following cardiac surgery between January 1, 2017 and December 31, 2020. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. 922 children were analyzed, with 79 or 8.6% having extubation failure, defined as reintubation within 48 hours. In multivariable analysis of clinical variables, preoperative mechanical ventilation, receiving inhaled nitric oxide at extubation, and duration of postoperative mechanical ventilation were independently associated with extubation failure. Preoperative mechanical ventilation had an adjusted odds ratio of 1.78 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.08 to 2.96 and a p-value equal to 0.03. Receiving inhaled nitric oxide at extubation had an adjusted odds ratio of 2.22 with a 95% confidence interval of 1.13 to 4.35 and a p-value equal to 0.02. And duration of postoperative mechanical ventilation had an adjusted odds ratio of 1.03 with a 95% confidence interval of 1 to 1.06 and a p-value equal to 0.03. 792 patients, or 86%, had pre-extubation inadequate oxygen delivery data. 602, or 65%, had pre-extubation inadequate ventilation of carbon dioxide index data, and 600, or 65%, had both pre-extubation inadequate oxygen delivery and inadequate ventilation of carbon dioxide index data available. In multivariable analysis, including these risk analytics algorithms, patients with either inadequate oxygen delivery greater than or equal to 5 or inadequate ventilation of carbon dioxide index greater than or equal to 50 before extubation had higher odds of extubation failure, with an adjusted odds ratio of 2.06, a 95% confidence interval of 1.08 to 3.94, and a p-value equal to 0.03. Conclusions. The addition of risk analytics algorithms evaluating the probability of inadequate systemic oxygen delivery or inadequate ventilation to clinical factors, including duration of ventilation or inhaled nitric oxide delivery at extubation, is useful in assessing the risk for extubation failure in children recovering from cardiac surgery. Abstract 4 is a featured original research article by Vasquez Colon et al., end-of-life course and subspecialty palliative care involvement for children on mechanical circulatory support, five-center retrospective cohort study from the United States from 2015 to 2020. Objectives: to characterize end-of-life care and subspecialty palliative care involvement in children with heart disease supported on mechanical circulatory support, including ventricular assist devices, or VADs, and extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, or ECMO. Design: a multi-center retrospective study describing clinical characteristics, subspecialty palliative care involvement and timing, and end-of-life circumstances. Setting: 5 U.S. centers. Patients: children less than 18 years old with heart disease who received mechanical circulatory support from January 1, 2015 to July 1, 2020. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Overall, 169 deaths occurred in 838 patients receiving mechanical circulatory support, including 23 VAD and 146 ECMO decedents. VAD patients were more likely to die after initial improvement than deterioration, whereas ECMO deaths were more likely to occur after early post-cannulation or following persistent decline without improvement. Most patients died the day of mechanical circulatory support discontinuation, 22 of 23 VAD and 92% of ECMO deaths. Overall, 87%, 33%, and 13% had ventilation, inotropes, or dialysis discontinued as part of the end-of-life process, respectively. Subspecialty palliative care followed 72 patients, 43% or 11 of 23 VAD and 42% of ECMO decedents. Early consult, including either pre-implantation or greater than 30 days before death, occurred in 36 patients or 21%, including all VAD decedents with subspecialty palliative care involved. Accounting for clustering by institution, subspecialty palliative care involvement was associated with 2 times greater odds of advanced care planning, with an odds ratio of 2.12 and a 95% confidence interval of 1.05 to 4.26, and lower odds of cardiopulmonary resuscitation, with an odds ratio of 0.35 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.12 to 0.99. Conclusions: most pediatric deaths after mechanical circulatory support occur soon after discontinuation of devices while receiving invasive therapies in ICUs. Subspecialty palliative care teams were involved in less than half of the cases, with only 21% being consulted early. Subspecialty palliative care was associated with more advanced care planning and less cardiopulmonary resuscitation at end of life. Further research is needed to better understand the barriers to and advantages of subspecialty palliative care involvement in children receiving mechanical circulatory support, as well as how to better identify patients who will benefit from early consultation to promote goal-concordant care. Abstract 5 is a clinical investigation article by Vala Beneni et al. Thromboprophylaxis for Critically Ill Adolescents, a multicenter case control study from the Children's Healthcare Advancements in Thrombosis Consortium. Objectives: to determine if thromboprophylaxis, including pharmacologic, mechanical, or in combination, is associated with a hospital-acquired venous thromboembolism risk reduction among critically ill adolescents. Design: multicenter case control study from the Children's Healthcare Advancements in Thrombosis Consortium Registry and VTE Risk Model Validation Study from January 2012 to July 2022. Setting: 32 North American PICUs. Patients: critically ill adolescents 12 to 19 years old, including cases with radiographically confirmed hospital-acquired venous thromboembolism, IDEST pulmonary embolism and deep venous thrombosis, and controls without hospital-acquired venous thromboembolism. Interventions: pharmacologic IDEST prophylactic anticoagulation and mechanical IDEST intermittent pneumatic compression thromboprophylaxis. Measurements and main results. Of 163 cases and 975 controls, 7.6% received pharmacologic, 23.5% mechanical, and 9.2% pharmacologic and mechanical thromboprophylaxis. Compared with controls, cases more frequently had central venous catheterization, 89% versus 21.1%, invasive ventilation, 52% versus 11.8%, longer median length of stay, 29 days with an interquartile range of 15 to 46 days versus 6 days with an interquartile range of 3 to 10 days, impaired mobility, 72.6% versus 22.1%, and infection, 48.5% versus 16%. All p-values were less than 0.001. venous thromboembolism risk tiers, low, moderate, and high, were calculated using validated scoring criteria. Using multivariable logistic regression for hospital-acquired venous thromboembolism risk, accounting for additional prothrombotic covariates and among each venous thromboembolism risk tier, pharmacologic and combined thromboprophylaxis, but not mechanical thromboprophylaxis alone, were independently associated with reduced hospital-acquired venous thromboembolism risk. Conclusions. Among critically ill adolescents, pharmacologic thromboprophylaxis alone or in combination with mechanical thromboprophylaxis, but not mechanical thromboprophylaxis alone, was associated with a hospital-acquired venous thromboembolism risk reduction. Abstract 6 is a clinical investigation article by Sutya et al. Children with severe neurologic impairment and their families in the PICU, a secondary qualitative analysis to assess clinician-family collaboration and mutuality. Objectives. In children with severe neurologic impairment admitted to the PICU, a trauma-informed approach to care may mitigate the effect of traumatic events on both parents and the child. We aim to characterize the themes that impacted the trauma-informed care principle of collaboration and mutuality in the PICU. Design. This study is a post-hoc secondary analysis of transcripts of interviews conducted for a prospective mixed methods cohort study examining the experiences of parents of children with severe neurologic impairment in the PICU and their clinicians in 2021 to 2023. Parents and clinicians had completed the semi-structured interviews peri-PICU discharge. Data were analyzed using a conventional content analysis approach. Two analysts coded all data independently with differences resolved by consensus. DDU's qualitative software was used to facilitate analysis, which followed consolidated criteria for reporting qualitative research guidelines. Setting: Quaternary Academic Center Children's Hospital. Parents: The original study from 2021 to 2023 recruited parents of children and young people 3 months to 25 years old with severe neurologic impairment who were admitted to the PICU and their PICU clinicians. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. There were 34 transcribed interviews, 15 from parents and 19 from PICU clinicians of multiple disciplines. We identified facilitators of and barriers to collaboration and mutuality. Facilitators included 1. Knowing a patient beyond the medical chart, 2. Understanding values, and 3. Clinician-family collaboration. Barriers included 1. Constraints of the PICU environment, 2. Challenges when engaging fully with patients with severe neurologic impairment, 3. Intrinsic variability among clinicians and parents, 4. Families being overwhelmed amid critical illness, and 5. Emotional toll on clinicians. Conclusions. Participants described the importance of and barriers to collaboration and mutuality in the PICU, which underscores the impact of valuing partnerships between clinicians and families. Abstract 7 is a clinical investigation article by Shannon et al. Parent and provider perspectives on short-term outcomes of critically ill ventilated children. Objectives. As mortality is rare in pediatrics, alternative composite outcomes such as ventilator-free days, PICU-free days, or hospital-free days are often used in pediatric critical care research. However, it is unclear which of these non-mortality components of composite outcomes are prioritized by families and thus reflect true patient-centered outcomes. We therefore aimed to determine and compare families and PICU providers' priorities regarding outcomes for ventilated patients in the PICU. We hypothesized that families and providers would prioritize different non-mortality outcomes. Design. This is a single-center, prospective cross-sectional survey of immediate caregivers of children experiencing both invasive and non-invasive ventilation and asynchronously of PICU attending providers. Subjects were asked to rank in order of priority 5 non-mortality outcomes: duration of invasive mechanical ventilation, duration of invasive and non-invasive ventilation, duration of any oxygen support, PICU length of stay, and hospital length of stay. Setting. Quaternary Academic PICU in urban setting. Subjects: We surveyed 50 adult caregivers and 30 PICU faculty. Interventions: Survey administration at a single time point. Measurements and main results. While both families, kappa equal to 0.11, and providers, kappa equal to 0.15, demonstrated poor overall intra-group agreement of rankings, most families and providers ranked duration of invasive ventilation highest and duration of invasive and non-invasive ventilation second highest. However, families ranked their subsequent priorities in order as the duration of all oxygen support, PICU length of stay, and then hospital length of stay. In contrast, providers ranked PICU length of stay, then hospital length of stay, and lastly, duration of all oxygen support. Conclusions. In a study that directly assessed family and provider preferences of non-mortality outcomes, we found that duration of invasive ventilation is indeed a patient and family-centered outcome measure, while length of stay is less prioritized in intubated PICU patients. This suggests that composites based on ventilator duration, such as ventilator-free days, are indeed patient-centered. Abstract 8 is a clinical investigation article by Rodriguez-Guirino et al., Evolution of Mechanical Ventilation Practices in Neonatal Cardiac Patients, Single-Center Retrospective Analysis of 3 1-year epochs during 2000 to 2020. Objectives. We sought to better understand how mechanical ventilation practices have evolved in neonates after cardiac surgery and evaluate whether such changes were associated with outcomes. Design. Single-center retrospective study of 3 different 1-year periods, 2001, 2011, and 2020. Setting. Quaternary institution with a dedicated cardiac PICU in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Patients. Neonates less than or equal to 28 days receiving mechanical ventilation after cardiac surgery. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Settings, modes, duration of mechanical ventilation, non-invasive ventilation or NIV, PICU, and hospital stay were compared across epochs. A competing risk analysis was performed to determine whether changes in mechanical ventilation delivery were associated with mechanical ventilation liberation. The study included 291 patients with 101 or 35%, 96 or 33%, and 94 or 32% in 2001, 2011, and 2020, respectively. We did not identify differences in baseline characteristics, diagnosis, and severity category across our epochs. We found the following practice changes by epoch. First, a decrease in tidal volume from 12.1 plus or minus 3.1 in 2001 to 6 to 7 milliliters per kilogram in 2011 and 2020, with a p-value less than 0.001. This practice was associated with chronological reduction in driving pressure, as measured in centimeters of water, 15.4 plus or minus 2.5, 14.3 plus or minus 2.2, and 13 plus or minus 2.6 centimeters of water, with a p-value less than 0.001. Second, post-extubation non-invasive ventilation was used more frequently in 2020. Third, faster weaning was introduced by 2020 and an increase in ventilator-free days, including non-invasive ventilation days, was observed, with a p-value less than 0.001. Fourth, after adjusting for demographic characteristics, epoch, severity, mechanical ventilation pre-surgery, higher tidal volume, and driving pressure were associated with lower prevalence of mechanical ventilation liberation with respective hazard ratios. Hazard ratios were 0.818 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.699 to 0.957 and a p-value equal to 0.012, and 0.865 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.825 to 0.907 and a p-value less than 0.001. Conclusions. In neonates requiring mechanical ventilation after cardiac surgery, we have found that practices in our center changed over 3 1-year epochs from 2001 to 2011 and to 2020. Reduction in tidal volume and early weaning when combined were associated with more ventilator-free days. Decrease in driving pressure and tidal volume were both associated with sooner mechanical ventilation liberation. Abstract 9 is a PCCM editorial commentary by Dr. Jacques Lacroix. The brain is highly vulnerable to imbalance in oxygen delivery and oxygen consumption. Anemia can cause such imbalance, a risk that is higher in critically ill patients with acute brain injury because the autoregulatory mechanisms of their cerebral blood vessels are often impaired. In 2018, a group of 42 experts in pediatric critical care medicine, transfusion medicine, and/or methodology, the Pediatric Critical Care Transfusion and Anemia Expertise Initiative, or TACSI, recommended that in critically ill children with acute brain injury, for example, trauma or stroke, a red blood cell transfusion could be considered if the hemoglobin concentration falls below 7 and 10 grams per deciliter. The agreement on this statement was strong, 90%, but the evidence supporting this recommendation was weak. Therefore, TACSI members recommended further clinical trials testing the transfusion threshold or hemoglobin concentration that has the best long-term functional outcomes in critically ill children with acute brain injury caused by traumatic brain injury, subarachnoid hemorrhage, or stroke. In this article, we address three questions. One, is the outcome of adults with acute brain injury better with a liberal than with a restrictive red blood cell transfusion strategy? Two, can we apply the results of randomized control trials and meta-analyses involving adults to children with acute brain injury? And three, can physiologic markers of anemia-related cellular hypoxia be used to guide prescription of red blood cell transfusion in addition to hemoglobin concentration? The PCCM narrative this month is by Dr. Zhaohui Su. Sinking, sinking, sunk. Going, going, gone. Gone today, he is gone today. The heart, heavy as stone, abandoned deep in intractable sorrow. The body, so numb, buried in the grip and grief of unknown realms. Sinking, sinking, sunk. Going, going, gone. Answers to my wildest questions. Wipes to my messiest cries. My doting family member who knew better. Gone today. Dances to my never on-key songs. Sing-alongs to my otherworldly dances. My biggest fan who knew better. Gone today. The lift me up in each struggle. The timely sunshine in every and all blues. My kindest mentor who knew better. Gone today. The rescue in every disaster. The off-ramp in every doom. My guardian angel who knew better. Gone today. The difference that split the darkness. The harbor that calms all storms. My darling friend who knew better. Gone today. The better side of everything that built society. The warmer side of anything that made humanity. My support community who knew better. Gone today. Anything and everything that mattered. Anything and everything that is worthwhile. My personal miracle who knew better. Gone today. Sinking, sinking, sunk. Going, going, gone. In peril. No more. Gone has become the new norm. Claiming each hour. Marking each breath. Gone today. He is gone today. So calm. So cold. So gone. So calmly and coldly gone. He is gone. Gone today. So messy. So paralyzed. So alone. So messily and paralyzingly alone. He is gone. Gone today. Sinking, sinking, sunk. Going, going, gone. My kinder mornings. My better tomorrows. My best laughs. Gone today. He is gone today. This concludes the abstracts for the September 2025 issue of Pediatric Critical Care Medicine. Thank you very much for listening. For more journal-related content, including access to the articles mentioned in this recording, please visit pccmjournal.org. Members of the SCCM Pediatric Section receive complimentary access to the PCCM Journal.